Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see all of you on this holy day. Thank you to, choir, our ensemble, for the special music. It was beautiful. Do appreciate all the effort that goes into preparing special music and the hours that they prepare and plan so that they can deliver that to God on our behalf, and we get to enjoy it along with them. So thank you all for that. Mike up, buddy. Okay, before I begin, Micah gave an excellent sermonette yesterday, and I was thinking about that as I watched him today, because the sermonette message was, today is the first day of the rest of your life, and I thought, you're having a rough start, buddy, okay? So I'm going to be praying for you. I love you, man, but no, I just had to say that. I appreciate Micah so much. He's a great asset to the congregation here, and I love how he can just make mistakes and roll with it, and I think that's a great lesson for all of us, but had to say that, because it was a really good sermonette, by the way, so. Well, it is certainly good to be with you all today, and I can't see everybody up in our balcony, but it's nice, as Mr. Waterhouse said, that God has blessed us to have a facility where we can all come together on a holy day, and it's just nice that we can fill the room up and sing with a good voice and be together and enjoy this time. And I'll be praying that it's even better next week, that we'll have great weather, that we can go outdoors and the time in between services. But we will save that till next week. But it's something we could be praying about as we head towards next week. We are here on the first day of Unleavened Bread, the first holy day in the annual cycle of holy days that picture God's plan of salvation. This is the one that kicks it off. I know I spoke in all three congregations yesterday. We talked specifically about last night and the night to be much observed and the meaning behind that. After observing the holy days for many years, we probably all come to wonder, you know, what could possibly be covered that hasn't already been covered? You know, the spring holy days come and it's like, okay, we're going to hear about sin, we're going to hear about leaven, we're going to hear about unleavening, we're going to hear about the spiritual significance of that. Unleavened bread of sincerity and truth and all those things. But I think that's the point. There really is nothing new. Nothing new under the sun, as the saying goes. There's nothing new in our scriptures. The words of my Bible stay the same year after year after year, and the same is true for you. But what changes is as we open up the pages of the Bible and we begin to read, we begin to see things maybe that we didn't see before. Or we see it in a way a little different, an emphasis maybe that we didn't pay attention to in the past. It's been there all along, but it didn't jump out at us as it did. And sometimes it's life experiences that we're going through that causes us to see things that we hadn't seen before. Friday morning, I woke up at 1:30 in the morning, and I know it was 1:30 because when I woke up, I was walking downstairs looking at the clock, and it was 1:30. That's how I know. It's pretty simple. It's not hard. But I woke up and I had this thought hit me for my message today that I had to get up and work on because it was not the message I had been working on. I woke up and I was laying in bed there and I'm just like, I got to do this. It just all started coming to my brain faster than I could process it. So I went downstairs and I began to just draft out what I wanted to cover today. You know, in the weeks leading up to Passover and the days of Unleavened Bread, as we all do, we revisit the events in Exodus 12, right? We begin with that. We read through that story. We probably will read through it all this week. And we'll look at the spiritual significance to us in our lives today. One thing that came out, as I said on Friday morning, that I hadn't really paid attention to much before, and of all things, Mr. Waterhouse spoke on a related topic, and that is faith. Faith. One of the lessons of the days of unleavened bread is faith. I saw it as I was reading this time that I hadn't really seen it so much in the past because I think sometimes you go into it looking for the lessons about sin and unleavened bread and putting sin out. And so you begin reading with that perspective. And so that's what you take out of it because you went into it looking for that. As I said, this the other morning I woke up and it kind of hit me. And Mr. Waterhouse spoke about faithfulness And it's going to, I don't know, did you wake up Friday morning at 1:30? You probably don't, no. If you did, you would have gone back to bed. You're smarter than me. But it hit me, and I thought, there is a lesson in the Exodus story about faith. That's what I want to talk about today. I mentioned some of this at Passover evening in Mansfield and in the sermon I gave yesterday. I was kind of, again, the thoughts were overflowing, so I was trying to keep them separate, but I shared some of this yesterday in the sermon. To put blood on the doorposts of your house and the lintel over your door and stay inside until morning took a lot of faith. I mean, just think it through. If you know what's about to happen and you're told that's all you have to do, there's a part of me that would be like, how about I put a lot of blood on the doorpost? Like, I want to be really, really sure. But that's all they had to do. Follow what they were instructed to do. Put the blood on the doorpost and on the lintel and stay inside. And yet as the night went on and all the screams and the cries of the Egyptians as their firstborn were being lost, you know, how many, you'd have this, like, I think I'd get nervous and fearful. Did I do the right things? Is this really all I'm supposed to do? But that took a great amount of faith. And as I said yesterday, for us it's the same thing. We put our faith in the shed blood of Jesus Christ. That's all we're actually told to do. Now, what we do after that is a life that brings forth fruit after that. But the simple act of accepting the blood of Jesus Christ as our sacrifice takes a great amount of faith. A great amount of faith. And then to head out on the night to be much observed in the full sight of the Egyptians, as I talked about yesterday, again, took a great amount of faith. A great amount of faith. You know, again, that. Put yourself in their situation. You're leaving. They're mourning the loss of their firstborn. And as I said, it wasn't just children, right? Anybody that was a firstborn, it could be a parent, a child, brother, sister, I mean, the firstborn. They're mourning their loss. They're burying the dead and livestock as well. So they're dealing with all of that. As it says in Exodus 12, it says, there was not a house where there was not one dead. Every one of the Egyptians was suffering. And you're making plans to leave town. It takes a lot of faith. On top of that, you plundered them, right? I mean, put yourself in that situation, right? They're burying their dead. Word gets to you, we're leaving, right? Because you were prepared the night before, as you were told, to be ready, staff in your hand, be ready to go. And so word gets to your house, we're leaving. You're probably going, yay. And then it says, but before you go, you need to go to the Egyptians and ask for silver and gold and clothing and ask them to give you stuff before you go. I think that alone would take faith to say, okay, why don't we just leave? But said, no, before you go, this is what you need to do. And so they have to have faith to go and do what was asked of them. So again, this is, I think, part of the lesson that I've saw this year that I've not really paid attention to in prior years. And so with that in mind, I want to cover this topic today, as the days of unleavened bread can remind us that in coming out of sin, pictured by Egypt, and journeying towards our promised land, the eternal life in God's kingdom, takes a lot of faith. And we can't let fear become a roadblock to our faith. And I want to go through some examples where that happened to Israel. Hopefully encourage us, as we heard even in the first message, that we would remain a faithful people. You know, trials will come, challenges will come, discouragement will come. But we can't let any of those things become roadblocks. And so I want to look today at this one lesson we can learn as we review these events. And I want to look at how faith should triumph over fears. Right? Not that we won't have fear, but we've got to have a faith that will triumph over them. I want to look at the consequences of what happens when we give in to our fears, as it relates to, we'll see in their story. And then what happens when we put our faith in the wrong things and the consequences for that. You know, Mr. Waterhouse said in the first message, staying faithful in times of trouble can be difficult. And there's no doubt about that. And we'll see that's something we see in the Exodus story with Israel. I titled the sermon, Faith Over Fear. Let's go to Exodus 14. Exodus 14 to begin. you'll see as we go through this, and if you think even in your own life, it's usually in times of fearful or troublesome times that our faith is really, that's when it's tested, to see if we're going to stick, have that stick-to-itiveness. Exodus chapter 14, begin in verse 8. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. So we're going to jump into the story. I don't want to go back to the beginning. We're going to jump in as they're leaving. But it says here in verse 8, they went out with boldness, with confidence. It was time to go. They had done what was asked of them, and they're leaving. Verse 9, so the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea. Verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And so they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. You know, we can look back at an event like this and think, well, why would they be afraid? I mean, look what God has already done for them. You know, but again, that's the benefit of hindsight. You look back at things and you think, why? What were they so afraid of? I mean, he brought them out. He delivered them from Egypt. And yet they look back here and they see Pharaoh's, chariots coming. And it says, so they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. So again, they become overcome with fear to the point where they were willing to return to Egypt if they could save their physical lives. That's how fearful they became. In a spiritual sense, I've come to know people in my life where they may come to the knowledge of the truth. God may begin to open up their eyes. They know they need to make changes, and then they turn back because it just appears to be too difficult. They become afraid. I could lose my job. I could this. I could that. And it does happen. Some people that God may be calling begin to see, and suddenly some things make them fearful. And so they turn back. Because again, they might be faced with giving up a very lucrative career. And in the face of that, they can't bring themselves to do it. Let's continue here and drop down to verse 13. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more. Again, I'm jumping through the story. I'm not reading all the narrative. We know, when they saw the chariots coming, they lamented, they complained to Moses, you brought us out here that we would die out here in the wilderness. And so Moses again tells them, don't be afraid, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord. Let's go to verse 14. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Go forward, keep moving. Don't be so afraid. And so Moses here then is instructed to lift up his rod and stretch out his hands. It's, again, a story we're quite familiar with this time of the year. Usually the famous Cecil B. DeMille movies get played and people watch that. And again, it's an exciting depiction to watch that. But he stretches out his hands to divide the sea in order that the children of Israel could pass through. And as we read the story and just kind of glance through it, we see that the pillar of cloud moves behind him. It casts darkness over the Egyptians, but it puts light upon the Israelites so that they can cross over the Red Sea. Verse 22. And so the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground. Let's just pause right there. That would take a lot of faith. The sea parts, the ground turns dry, and go forward. How many would be like, yeah, you go first? You want to wait till they're like halfway across, and then you're looking and say, okay, I'll go. And we can read the story and forget the amount of faith that had, were they just motivated out of fear of the pursuing Egyptians? I don't think so. I think it took a tremendous amount of, because there was a part of them that said, hey, let's just go back with the Egyptians. But that's not what they were told to do. They were told to go forward, and so they did. They went on dry ground, as it said. Verse 20, let's see, I think I got ahead of myself. Yeah, so the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea, verse 22, on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand, and on their left, and the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. So again, here you're making this journey. You've head out now. You've stepped out in faith. You move forward. You're walking on dry ground, and here they come. You know, I wonder, you know, who's looking back worrying, okay, this isn't working out because we're crossing and they're crossing. What have we actually accomplished here? So again, as they begin this journey, they head into the sea and they're on dry ground and again, wondering and worrying how this is going to end. But God delivered them. In the end, their faith triumphed over their fear. You know, they had to overcome, but it's not that they didn't have fear. Right? We all have fear in life in different times and different circumstances. But their faith triumphed over their fear. They stepped out on faith, they went across, and they moved. Chapters 16, 17, and 18, we'll see. We're not going to read through them, but you can read through it on your own. Now's a good time of the year to probably review those through the week ahead. But we'll see a steady pattern of people complaining. And every time they complained, God would show his mercy to them, his love towards them. He would show his mighty power to them. Over and over again, when they would complain about things, he would show himself to them through the things that he did for them. Not only delivering them, but providing for them. You want something to eat? I'll give you something to eat. And then they would grumble about what they got to eat. You want something to drink? I'll get you something to drink. But he was always revealing himself to them. We come to chapter 19. Chapter 19, we're only about 3 months after going out from Egypt. They camp at the base of Mount Sinai in Israel. They agree to enter into a covenant relationship. Notice chapter 19, verse 3. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice, keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine." Verse 6. "And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." And so Moses came and he called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded them. And then all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." And so Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. You know, what I find interesting in this section as we read through it is they didn't even know yet what they were agreeing to. That was yet to come. But they said, "Sure, whatever you say, we agree to it." You know, in the chapters that follow, God will give them the commandments, the laws, the statutes, the ordinances that they were to follow. But they didn't know those yet. You know, as I was revisiting this, it occurred to me that I wonder if all they heard was, "You shall be a treasure to me." Ooh, like that. "You'll be a special people." Oh, yeah. Because you're pretty powerful. You know, we saw what you can do. Right? "You'll be a kingdom of priests." Oh, yeah. So they're like, yes. But you know, that took faith. You think about it. It took faith to say yes because they didn't even know what was ahead of them. Think back when God began to open up your mind and call you. At some point, you made a decision to move forward in faith, not really knowing where that journey was going to go. You may have had a bit of an idea, but at some point we said, "Yes, I do. I agree." And then as time goes on, we learn more and more. Let's move over to chapter 32. Because again, they would learn more about what God would expect of them in the verses and the chapters that follow. But go over to chapter 32 now. We're going to see events taking place while they're encamped here at the base of Mount Sinai. We come to chapter 32, and we have this familiar account of the golden calf. So again, as I said, as you go through all of Israel's exodus out of Egypt and the things that happened to them, their faith is always tested, I guess. They have certain fears to overcome, but they have to move forward in faith. Here in Exodus chapter 32, we'll begin in verse 1. "And now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as is Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't have a clue what's become of him. In essence, they're afraid now because we don't know what's happened to him, so we got to do something, is in essence what they're saying. We don't know what's happened to him, and so now we're a little nervous, a little fearful. We got to do something. We have to take actions into our own hands. So again, was it that they feared that Moses, something had happened to him permanently? Was it because they didn't have this pillar or things, these visual things happening, so they decided they needed something visual to look at, and so they decided they needed to have this idol? You know, it's interesting. I think this is a good example here of how often faith and patience work hand in hand. Because Moses delayed returning. He hadn't returned. He just hadn't returned yet. And as you go through and you look at examples of faith in the Bible, you'll see that almost all of them are accompanied with a period of time of just being patient. Right? Just wait and be patient and let God reveal what he's doing, which is maybe one of the biggest challenges we have in being a faithful people, is just being patient and waiting on God and letting him deliver us. Drop down to verse 32 here of Exodus 32. This would lead then to consequences for lacking faith. The fact that they didn't have faith, that Moses was going to return, that God was watching over them, that they needed to make an idol. That's what they devised as a solution. There would be consequences. Verse 32 of Exodus 32. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book, which you have written. Moses here is appealing to God. And the Lord said to Moses, verse 33, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. Now therefore, go lead the people to the place which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit for punishment, I will visit punishment upon them for their sin. And so the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron made. There's consequences for having a lack of faith. You know, when that lack of faith causes you to take action that is contrary to God, they, in their case, they decided to build an idol, there'll be consequences for that. You know, had they been patient and waited and faithful, as we heard in the first message, and just let God work things out, this wouldn't have come upon them. You know, faith is one of those, fear is one of those enemies of our faith. Anxious care, doubt, human reasoning are the other three we've looked at in the past. But fear can be one of the biggest ones. Because when we're fearful, it's in our nature to want to do something about it. We want the fear to go away. So, and sometimes God's just telling us to be patient. Just be patient with me. Let him work it out. I want to jump ahead in the chronology of Israel to the book of Numbers. After coming out of Egypt, we're going to go to Numbers 13. After coming out of Egypt, we have another example of the consequences for lacking faith and giving in to fears. And as I say that, you know, there's no, you can't point to a moment in time, a singular event when you would say that, you know, I or you or person A or person B lacked faith and moved out of fear. It's one of these, it sort of morphs over time. It's you can't look at one singular event or activity. It's usually a gradual thing. Numbers chapter 13. Begin in verse 1. Here they're camped in the wilderness of Paran, the southern approach to Canaan. They're about to enter the promised land. They're almost there. Right? They've come out of Egypt. They've had their challenges. They've you know, frustrated Moses. They've got God a little bit, you know, frustrated with them. But they're almost there now. So they've made it, almost. They're right there, camped on the other side. They're about to go in. Numbers chapter 13 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one, a leader among them. And so Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them, men who were heads of their children of Israel. And then he begins to name all the individuals that were sent. But notice what it says in verse 2. I am, you know, send the men to spy out the land which I am giving to the children of Israel. I'm giving this to them. It's theirs. So just, all I want you to do is just go check out the land that I'm giving to you, is what he said there. And so, as I said, they're right there on the threshold of that long-awaited promised land, the one they've heard passed down from generation after generation while they were slaves. What they yearned for and longed for and wanted, that's what they said, they wanted more than anything else, and now they're here. And it's almost like they get there and go, yeah, it's not quite what we pictured, at least for some of them. We'll see here then that this discouragement and lack of faith would keep them just outside from entering in. Drop down to verse 17. Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south, go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage. Be strong, be courageous. Do what's ahead of you. Bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. And so they went up, and they spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath, and they went up through the south, and they came to Hebron. Let's drop to verse 23. They came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried between the two of them on a pole. And so they go through, and they spy out the land and all that it has. Drop down to 25. They returned from spying out the land after 40 days. And so they spent over a month there checking out, and they come back. Verse 26, now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Like it's everything we were told. Flowing with milk and honey, this is the fruit. Right? Nevertheless, they had to, however, got some bad news for you. The people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. Verse 30, Caleb quieted the people before Moses and says, okay, let's go. God promised it's ours, so I don't care what the report says. Let's go take the land that's been promised to us, is in essence what he's saying to them. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak. Anak come from the giants, and we are like grasshoppers in their own sight, and so we are in their sight. There's a lack of faith. You know, and again, it's easy to look back at the story and think, oh, how could they do that? I don't know. Would we have been different? And it's human nature, right? Would we have been different? I don't know. I think we all would like to think that we're the Joshua Caleb character, right? Because that's the one we want to be. But sometimes we're maybe the 10. Because we look at something and we doubt God and we hold back and we look at all the negatives and we don't go forward focused on the positive. We can all do this. Right? It's just part of human nature. It's part of overcoming fear in our lives. Chapter 14, verse 1, so all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night, and all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in Egypt, right? If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness, like one way or another, we'll die there, die here, but why would we want to go forward? Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to just go back to the life of sin? That would be the modern day analogy. Why don't we just go back to Egypt? Let's go back to the way life used to be. At least we knew what life was like back then. But what we're facing is too hard. It's too scary. It's too difficult. And so they said to one another, verse 4, let us select a leader and let's return to a life of sin. Right? If we're going to make that Egypt modern-day parallel, let's just pick somebody that's going to take us back to a life of sin, because that's it's easier to do that. If we're familiar with that life, the one ahead of us is kind of scary. So let's go back to Egypt, they say. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. Every time I read that, I just picture them going, oh, this is not good. You know, it's like, this is not going to be good. So they fall down. You know, it's like, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. They spoke to the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But it sort of fell on deaf ears, right? As much as they tried to persuade people not to be fearful, that evil report from the 10 spies, they were fearful spies, not faithful spies, as we heard in the first message, right? To be faithful, to move forward, because God says it's a land that I'm going to give to you. And so again, they lament and they get upset and they want to go back. They're too afraid. They can't bring themselves to move forward. And here then we see there are consequences for their fear. Because, again, they were just irrational, making a logical decision, right? Let's just turn back. We'd rather die out in Egypt or in the wilderness. And so what we see here, the consequences for this fear is that they're going to be turned back. They're going to spend 40 years in the wilderness. And Joshua and Caleb will go with them, and Joshua and Caleb will have to keep a good attitude for 40 years, right? Even though, you know, they didn't do anything wrong. They gave a correct report. Doesn't matter. That's the decision. So they're going to go back. They're going to spend 40 years, 1 year for each day that they spied out the land. And then everyone 20 years and older, except for Joshua and Caleb, would die in the wilderness during those 40 years. The 10 spies that gave this evil report, there'd be consequences for them as well. They're going to die of plague. And so there's great consequence when we, and certainly in this story, give a fearful, not accurate report, and you cause this, you know, fear to come upon Israel. You know, faith should move us forward when we're facing fearful things. Again, faith should triumph over fear. I'm not saying it's easy, but we need to keep that in mind. Our faith should triumph over our fears. I'm going to look at one more example, just briefly, over in Judges 6. This one is in the time of Gideon. It is a recurring theme in the lives of the Israelites that when they did evil in the sight of the Lord, as we could read over and over, they were given over to their enemies. It would happen over and over. You would think after a while they'd learn their lesson, but, you know, they're just like us, right? They're human beings with human nature, and they just seem to keep making similar mistakes over and over. And the case here in Judges chapter 6, for 7 years, the Midianites, Amalekites, and those from the east, the Mesopotamians, would raid Israel during the time of the harvest, confiscate everything coming off the fields. They then, the Israelites, took to the caves. They took to the high country to hide out. They felt that would give them safety and security. In Judges chapter 6, look at verse 8, we'll just look at a couple of verses. Well, you know, God makes it clear to them why all this happened to them. Judges chapter 6 and verse 8, we'll just break into the story. You can read the whole story another time. The Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel who said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt. I brought you out of the house of bondage. I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all who oppressed you. And I drove them out before you and I gave you their land. Also I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice. Right? He said, don't fear them. But they did. And so the consequences for being fearful was that 7 years of oppression, hiding out in caves because of not being obedient to what God had asked them to do. I want to move to the New Testament and look briefly at an example. In Mark chapter 4, Here we have a storm upon the sea. The disciples are with Jesus Christ, and he is asleep in a boat. You're probably familiar with that story. Mark chapter 4. I think along with this is the reality that we all have different levels of fear and faith, I guess I would put it that way. That we all have different things that, some things that I may not fear may fear somebody else. And so part of our challenge as a people is to be patient with one another, right? To help move people along at whatever, you know, pace they're at, instead of just telling people, hey, you need to be where I'm at, or somebody telling you, you need to be where, you know, where they're at. Everybody's at a different place, and so that contributes to the challenge of, you know, looking at Israel moving forward. You know, all those people had different levels of what they were comfortable with or fearful, just like the 10 spies. 10 of them were afraid, 2 of them weren't. But here in Mark chapter 4, in Matthew's gospel account, we're not going to go there, but he'll use the phrase, you know, oh, you have little faith. But notice what Mark writes here. Mark chapter 4, beginning in verse 35. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, let us cross over to the other side. Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow, and they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Look, we're afraid. And they were afraid enough that they woke him up, because they were fearing for their lives. And he arose, verse 39, rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. Now, it says in Matthew's account, what he says actually is, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Mark records it this way. He said to them, verse 40, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? Much stronger recording of that event here in Mark's account. It can be translated, the word for no here can be translated literally, it can be absolutely negative. Right? Zero, zip, zilch, nada, nothing, zero is the word that Mark records. How is it that you have absolutely zero faith? That's a pretty strong statement, you know, from Jesus, if that, you know, is the way Mark renders it. Again, Matthew, a little softer blow to the ego, how you have little faith, right? So that's a little bit easier to take there. We could, of course, but we won't, but we could go to Luke 22. I think I've touched on this prior to Passover in a sermon, you know, about Peter denying Christ. He was afraid. He was afraid of what would happen to him if people knew he was with Jesus Christ and part of his ensemble of, you know, the disciples and the apostles that were with him. So he denied him 3 times out of fear to save his own life. That was the action he took. That's in Luke 22. You could look that up later. I want to go now to what we call the faith chapter in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. I would encourage you, if you have time in this week ahead, to read through Hebrews 11. We're not going to read through the whole thing. And maybe take time and look up each one of those individuals and go back and read the events of their life, because they're recorded here as people of faith. Great faith that they had that overcome various trials and obstacles and fears that they had. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1, excuse me. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. Again, drop down to verse 6 and it says, but without faith it is impossible to please him. Without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. It's what we call kind of the simplest definition of faith, is to believe God and do what he says. If he says go forward, go forward. And that can be hard to do at times. Depends on what you're facing in life. It's not always easy. I'm not here to say it's easy. I'm just saying it's something we're supposed to do. And we're all at different levels, you know, where somebody could say jump and you would jump, and others like, oh, maybe not so. Right? We're all at a different place there. But the chapter here, chapter 11, goes on to list many people. And as I said, you can go back and read every single one of their stories. They made decisions to put aside some fear in their life to move forward. Hebrews 11, let's go down to verse 13. They all looked forward to a promise, and yet they all died waiting to receive that promise. But they didn't waver. They still did what they knew they needed to do. Hebrews 11, look at verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, if they had thought about Egypt, if they looked back at Egypt, they would have had opportunity to return, to go back. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. You know, we need to keep our eyes fixed on where we're going, not where we've been. You know, one of the things in this time of year as we prepare for Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, we always talk about self-examination, personal reflection, certainly an important aspect. But we always tell people, it's not about going back to every sin of your whole life. We don't look back because we've repented of those things. We look forward, right? We look forward and we make changes in our lives today. And so just as we saw in their example, when they became fearful, they looked back. We can't do that. In our spiritual journey, in our walk towards the kingdom, we can't look back. You know, die in faith, moving forward. Down to verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer afflictions with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith, verse 27, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith, verse 29, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempted to do so were drowned. By faith. Every example in this chapter is going to talk about things accomplished by faith. When you don't know the answer, you don't see the solution, and you step forward on faith. Verse 39, Hebrews 11, verse 39. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. Still didn't get the promise. Still didn't happen. But it didn't stop them from moving forward. And one of the lessons of these days is our faith has to overcome our fears. Right? And we have to understand where that balance is in our life. Some closing thoughts. I'm going to go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. At the end of the parable of the persistent widow over in Luke, we won't go there. Jesus asked the question, when the Son of Man returns, will he really find faith on earth? Will he find faith? You know, our faith is evidenced by what we do, right? And the actions we take. But over in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul warns the church about putting their faith in the right things. Because it's as much as what we're putting our faith in as it is having faith. We can put our faith in the wrong things, and it won't have the same outcome. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, notice what Paul says here. And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with the excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you or amongst you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness. I was with you in fear, he says, and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith, verse 5, should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. And the word for power in both of those verses is dunamis, and we've looked at that in the past. Dunamis. It means power that's inherent in a thing by its very nature. It comes through God's Holy Spirit. It gives us the power. Your faith should not be in wisdom of men, but in the power of God. It is that power that comes through that indwelling. And of course, we have, as many of us know, as a memory verse in 2 Timothy, God has not given us a spirit of fear. In fact, some translations say not giving us the spirit of fear, as opposed to a spirit of fear. But what he has given to us is power, love, and a sound mind. That's what he's given to us. A couple verses to wind up with. 1 John 4. Because God is love. It is that divine nature that is to be in us, that we're developing. And as the love of God becomes who we are and perfected in us, we need to cast out fear and have faith to move forward. And whatever obstacles that will come our way, there's going to be more. Right? We're living in interesting times, as the saying goes. We're going to have to be able to develop within ourselves a faith that's ready to overcome our fears, whatever those fears may be. 1 John chapter 4, we'll break into the chapter here in verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. And in this love of God was manifested toward us that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. In this love, verse 10, in this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love has been perfected in us. For this we know, that we abide in him, and he in us, because he has given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and testified that the Father has sent the Son as Savior of the world. Whoever confesses that Jesus is the Son of God, God abides in him, and he in God. And we have known and believed the love that God has for us. God is love. And he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him. Verse 17, love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. When we take on that perfect nature of love, which is God, which we're all striving to get to, that's why we still have fear, because we're not there yet. But as we do, it casts out fear. Perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment, but he who fears has not been made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. I want to go back to Hebrews 12. We're going to conclude in Hebrews chapter 12. Because after listing those heroes of faith, as we call them, in chapter 11, if you just take out the chapter breaks and just keep on reading, notice what we read here in Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, witnesses of great faith in times of trial and fears and turmoil and whatever they were facing, let us lay aside every weight, the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance. Perseverance, hypomene is the word there, right? And again, as I said, it's amazing how often patience is right alongside faith building, right? Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So maybe a lesson we can take away from Israel's example in these days of unleavened bread, maybe during these 7 days ahead of us, one of the lessons we can draw and we can learn is that we must have a faith that triumphs over fears.